Hi, this is Becky from Dystopica, and you are watching CMS TV.
Right back here on Chris Aiken Presents. It's Chris and Eric, and I want to thank Tony from Sonata Arctica for coming on the show. It was great to chat with him. Great to find out what's going on in Finland and, you know, in the Finland music scene. You know, it's surprisingly a bigger scene than I thought, but good stuff there, man. But I do have a couple of things, unless you have something definitive you wanted to talk about. I do have some things to talk about. Well, if you have it, go, because
No, I'll think of something. You go first.
All right. Well, as much as we did the positive aspect of music at the beginning of the show, now I'm going to go the other way. Now I'm going to go to the negativity that's out there, because there was just a lot of it this month, or this week, rather. I'm going to start with, are you a Fear Factory guy or no? Do you like Fear Factory?
I think they have some great songs. I like Fear Factory. Dino, yeah.
Yeah. So the former singer of Fear Factory, who I love, I'm a big
Richard Seabell.
Burton Seabell, yeah. Burt put out his first solo record since he quit Fear Factory, or was fired, or however that went. Mm-hmm. I think he quit. The song is called Anti-Droid. It's basically, yeah, he's not saying this, he's not saying it's not, but it's basically a diss track on Fear Factory. You know, it has lyrics like, you know, I had to quit being a slave to the factory and stuff like that. I mean, it's a very clear diss track. And that leads to my question for you, as somebody that's in and out and about with a ton of different bands. And I do not want you to specify anybody in particular if you think of anybody in particular.
Right.
But is it necessary to diss your past band in order to promote your present band? Because it seems like an awful lot of them do it. Not necessarily with writing a song, although there's plenty of examples of that. But I also see it in the interview side, where it might be more subtle, where it'll be like you're talking to somebody and they're like, well, you know, now that I'm not in band X, I have the freedom to do blah blah, you know, they'll say things like that that is clearly like, well, I was stuck in that band and now I'm not, you know. I'll bring up an exact example that I did have, just because it's one I just recently had, and two, I'm pretty sure it's somebody you do not play gigs with. But I chatted with James Durbin recently, and Durbin was like, you know, I didn't even ask him a Quiet Riot question, but Durbin made sure to note that he had creative differences with them. You know, I mean, he went out, and you know me, I don't really talk about Quiet Riot at all, but that's a whole nother thing.
Sure.
With that being said, Durbin went out of his way, because I think the question I asked him was, why are you doing this kind of metal? Because he's doing like Dungeons and Dragons Dio metal type of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, why are you doing this when you had such a big audience from American Idol? Where, you know, he could have easily capitalized on that pop scene because he had 10 million followers, you know. And he was like, well, you know, I've been doing metal since I left American Idol. I did Quiet Riot, but I had creative differences with them. Like, you know, he went out of his way to say it. And I get that a lot. And you're in the scene, man. I mean, you know what people are saying behind the scenes. Is it a necessary evil for bands even if it's just for their own head, to diss what they used to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it really depends if it was an amicable departure or not. You know, if a guy gets fired, no one's happy about that. You know what I mean? There's going to be resentment. You know, obviously when someone gets fired, they're pointing the finger as that person's the problem, not the rest of the band. And that's a lot psychologically to deal with. Now when you take a singer, and that happens with, and they're trying to put out some more material, that stuff's all fresh in their head. You know what I mean? And they're just trying to speak from their soul and they need lyrics. Now, especially if it's like, if they're a metal band, is a perfect platform to like, or a hard rock band to do diss stuff, or a hardcore rap band too. Yeah. I should throw in, but, that's a perfect platform to do some dissing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, if you were in like Air Supply, it wouldn't roll the same. You yeah, know what I mean?
Probably wouldn't. Yeah, that is true. If you said Russell Hitchcock is a total asshole, what a dick, you know,
right,
then, that probably wouldn't fly as well with the Air Supply people, I guess. Yeah.
You know? Lost in love and I hate you so much. You held me back all these goddamn years. And, you know,
that's right.
That's not going to do that. But these other bands, it does they can't help themselves. I mean, you know, even back to us, I think on Smash, at the time we had some dust ups with Bobby Blotzer, like around that time. And we went into the studio, one of the songs he had in his head, and he kind of, not straight out calling the guy, but the lyrics were basically a diss to him, you know, like him just talking smack to him without making it too obvious. But I've seen it firsthand. And you know, I've done it with relationships, you know, like a relationship ends and you kind of write a song about a bad relationship. That's pretty common.
Yeah. My thing is, and I wish they would stop it because it really, I don't know, it feels petty to me. Maybe it's just because I'm older and I've seen it so many times that it feels a little petty. But the thing that always surprises me is it's hard to take a diss seriously when you did such good work and you didn't diss it then. You know, for a singer to say, I don't like anything that I did with those guys, whoever that would be. And again, I want to preface this by saying James Durbin did not say that, because I know I used him as the example. He didn't say that. He just threw in the little creative differences. What I'm saying is there are singers that have said, I want nothing to do with that anymore. Right. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You wanted me to spend $15 a disc times those 8 discs that you put out, and you told me that they were the greatest thing ever. You know, and now you're saying, I hate that shit. You know, it's like, come on, man. Just say, look, that was a time. And why it can't people just be honest? That's my question. Why can't they just be honest and say, I was happy for a while. It went to shit. I moved on.
Right. Yeah, there's certainly, you know, personality differences or what have you. But you would think that when you've contributed together to something that a lot of people love, you don't want to be selfish and ruin it for them. Or the fact that these guys did have such a history together that he's, you know, still getting paid on the old stuff, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So why would you do anything to stop people from buying the product that you worked together to make or whatever? That's stuff that should probably be kept to yourself, or just personal messages to those guys. But it is, sometimes there's a retaliation, you know, if somebody goes into the press and says something and then the other person feels like they have to go defend themselves. You know, sometimes interviewers can catch a guy at a snarky moment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they say something. It all sucks for the fan the most at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, you're playing into my hands here, my friend.
I love to do that.
Because that brings up this exact article that I was going to bring up next. This stuff, David Lee Roth needs to shut up. He's so petty about Wolfie. And it's like, he's ruining what people think of Van Halen. Look, Van Halen's dead. We know that. Figuratively, literally. Eddie Van Halen died.
I'm wearing a Van Halen shirt.
Yeah, there you go. That's a 1984, isn't it?
That's right.
I recognize it. I owned that shirt at one point before I turned into a big fat tub of shit. But David Lee Roth comes off before we say what he comes off like, just like you were saying, is there any band really in rock and metal with a bigger legacy, a bigger positive legacy than Van Halen? I don't know anybody that says, oh, I always hated Van Halen.
Right.
Might not be their favorite, but nobody really hates it. Van Halen's like AC/DC. It's like, yeah, maybe you're into them, maybe you're not, but no one hates them. Yes?
Right. Correct.
You know? So for Roth to be out here smacking, and he's done it numerous times now with videos, like he's made videos attacking Wolfie, and he's said things in the press attacking Wolfie. And the only thing that I've read, unless I'm wrong, is Wolfie said, yeah, Roth's the one stopping a different kind of truth from being on the streaming services. That's all Wolfie really said. He never really said, and that's because Roth sucks or
any
of that.
Did he say Roth? Did he say, like, there's one guy stopping that?
Yeah. He did. He did. He said there's one guy that's stopping it, but I think people put it ain't Eddie, and Alex doesn't seem to give a shit, really, what goes on, you know, with the business of it. And Wolfie's obviously wants anything that he's done out there as he's trying to grow his career. So, you know, he kind of pointed the finger. He did not directly point the finger. But Roth is just driving people away now, I think. And again, it's just like we were talking about before. It's so petty. Why does Roth ever have to mention this kid? Directly or indirectly? For what? They play
He's not
one
even
record.
Playing Van Halen songs. He's like he's playing his own music, for crying out loud. He's not even at all, like, you know, except his name happens to be Wolfgang Van Halen, but he's calling it Mammoth.
Yeah. I mean, it's so petty. And this is what I was getting to. It hurts the brand. It hurts everything that they brought, that they did. Because people are... they're talking as much about David Lee Roth now. Like, if you go and look at, we can do it. I did not prep for this, but if you go and look at the comments, it's all going to be back and forth. Some are taking, and it certainly is. Certainly, some are saying, right here, Wolfie's taking the high road on this. And
yep.
But the next guy is, there's a first time for everything.
He's learning. And I will chime in on that. You know, from what I've witnessed in the last couple of years, he's learning to take the high road, which is a good thing, especially when it comes to the Van Halen fans. He's got to really watch it. And I get it. I feel him.
Like, look at this comment. Roth is crazy, but he's still a god and the true singer. Nobody has Diamond Dave's charisma personality. I think nobody did in the day. I think there's a lot of people that do now. But, you know, I just, my point is, this whole thing, and it even spills over to the Sammy Hagar, David Lee Roth thing as well. Why do you have to pick? I'm a Sammy fan. I admit it. I'm more Team Sammy than Team Dave. But that certainly doesn't mean that I don't like Fair Warning. Or it certainly doesn't mean that I don't like Van Halen 1 or 2 or your John, or, you know, 1984 or whatever. I just like the Sammy records too. To be honest, I tried my damnedest to like the Gary Cherone record.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on. Why are we so territorial with this? And why do these artists, the best thing David Lee Roth could do is say, I had a great run with the greatest guitarist that ever played. I hope y'all are enjoying it. Maybe I don't want that record out there because I don't think it was the best representation of Van Halen.
Mm-hmm.
And leave it at that. He could leave it at that, but no, he doesn't.
What's your opinion on it? What's your opinion? Do you think he has any validity with that statement? I mean, they put out some pretty, like, at least two or three good songs off it, right?
It was okay. I mean, is it... it's not the worst Van Halen record, honestly. It's probably the worst in the Dave era. Of the Dave records, it's probably the worst. That's a fair
statement.
I'll
have to listen to it. I thought I heard a couple songs. Was that the one?
Well, I hope you own it, because it ain't on streaming.
Well, Which did that have a couple singles on it? Like
it did Tattoo and
Tattoo, right?
I think She's the Woman. She's the Woman. You know, it had a few. It had a couple.
Which that you can't get stuff like this anymore. Which one was that on?
Which one?
Because one of them was really cool, which was actually sounded like an old 70s Van Halen song. Can't get this stuff anymore.
Van Halen.
Was that it?
Can't get this stuff no more. Let's see. No, that's on The Collection.
Oh, okay. That was when they did they just threw an extra added track to sell a best of thing. Because that was promising. That was actually pretty promising.
Van Halen, A Different Kind of Truth. The songs were, all right, let's see. Full album. Oop, it's playing. The songs are not listed. Here we go. Oh, here they are. Tattoo, You and Your Blues, Chinatown, Blood and Fire, Bullet Head, As Is, Honey Baby Sweetie Doll, The Trouble with Never, Out of Space, Stay Frosty, Big River, and Beats Working. Tattoo was, we can play a little Tattoo.
Tattoo.
I mean, it's an okay. I don't love this song. I think it's kind of cheeseball.
He kind of seemed like David Roth was starting to do like all his verses were like "Ladies' Night in Buffalo," and then we right? go into the chorus. Like,
you're right on that. Yeah, let's play a little of this. See, it's all right. It's fun. I mean, it's if it was on at a party, you wouldn't be like, ooh. But at the same time, I don't think you'd go out of your way to listen to it. You'd hear that and you'd be like, hey, somebody throw on Van Halen 1. You know?
Yeah, it still has a couple of the cool things that they do, but it almost sounds like, yeah, a solo Roth song. But I like the intro of it's pretty badass. It just reminds me of just how much I loved his guitar playing and everything.
Oh, I know.
But it definitely had that thick Van Halen sound. It was good. I mean, I think all these years later that people should have been happy with that. Maybe their expectations were like way up in the stars or something. But yeah. I thought that was a pretty good effort for these guys coming together after all.
Well, they
these
were
years.
Old songs, too. I mean, that's a big part of it was the songs were old. They were songs that weren't completed or so it's not like they got together after 30 years apart or whatever it was and wrote a new album. They had these songs from various sessions in the past, or a lot of the songs, and they worked them up and put it out, and it's okay. You know, I mean, it's what you expect when you get a B-sides record. They just didn't call it a B-sides record. It's a solid.
Yeah, sounded good, the production, and I could see that song even being in a movie or something, like for a second. You know what I mean? Where it would have it worked for a scene or something with a tattoo.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm too forgiving.
To me, the whole album is like a 7 out of 10.
Oh,
but
that's good.
But Van Halen is a 9 out of 10 band. You know, I mean. All of the Roth records and most of the Sammy records, I would put as like an 8.5, 9. You know, the only one out of either catalog that I would put lower for Sammy, I'd say Balance was kind of crap.
Oh, yeah, I stopped listening to them way long ago. Yeah. In the 90s. Poundcake was like the last song I ever heard.
Yeah, I like from that. Them, and that's like 91.
Yeah. I think that's when I checked out of that. Sammy, I mean, he definitely has way more of a vocal range than David Roth. But he's also more like mainstream and kind of commercial pop than David Lee Roth, too.
Yeah. But he's, but back to our topic, Sammy's another one. Sammy can't keep Dave's name out of his mouth. And Sammy don't need it. No. Why does Sammy Hagar's worth $1 billion. The last thing he needs is to be bickering with a guy that's not worth $1 billion because half of the fan base likes him more than you.
It's, you know, stupid. I mean, even me at my small level, when it comes out or I hear somebody said something about me, I don't fucking go on about it on the internet. I just go post a picture of me in my multi-million-dollar condo on the beach.
That's right.
And I show them how much better I'm living than that pathetic person that's actually trying to say something bad about me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I just wish bands would stop doing this because it's really, I don't know, disconcerting for fans. Take bands too serious. I'll be the first one to admit that they take their bands way too. They don't just take it as entertainment. You know, like if you're watching movies, what's your favorite movie of all time?
Aliens.
Okay, great movie. But you ain't living your life around aliens either. You're not. You know, you have not.
Actually,
painted
I have
picture
a
of the monster.
A xenomorph in my bathroom right now. I'm feeding it cat food.
Do you really? If you have a kid, are you going to name it Ripley?
That's my new cat. I just got a cat named Ripley.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. It's not like that with movies. Very rarely, if ever, do you see somebody rolling up their sleeve and showing you a Goodfellas tattoo or a... you know, or aliens, you know, maybe the alien head guy, whatever that thing's
name
is.
We've seen some pretty shitty tattoos. We've done whole segments on people's tattoo choices, but yeah.
But very rarely do you see a movie character as a tattoo. Maybe a cartoon character, but not Sam Rothstein from Casino or whatever. You wouldn't tributize Casino by getting a tattoo or living your life around it, or buying those glasses so that you look like him in the movie. You know, most people don't do that. But with bands, they live that much harder with them. How many tattoos have you seen? And this is just a common question. How many Van Halen tattoos have you seen? Thousands, right?
Yeah, certainly.
And Kiss, and, you know, Pantera, Cowboys from Hell, and all that other Metallica. You know, I mean, the big bands get tons of tattoos. People live their lives closer to bands for some reason. They adapt to their bands, which makes this kind of petty horse shit that much more bad. It's like, just shut up and let people enjoy what you did, especially when you're retired. No,
music's I dare say that music's like making more of a lasting impression than movies are. Like when you listen to you know, I was in that store the other day that's some soul on from like the 60s and 70s. Now, most movies you watch from the 60s or 70s are dog shit when you try to watch it today. Like we've come so far with cinematography since then that it's actually painful to watch stuff from the 60s and 70s, but the music is just will live forever. It's that
good. Dude, I've written 6 books. Every chapter of every book starts with a lyric from wherever I was. Whatever I was writing about, the lyric relates to it.
Sure.
You know, and quite honestly, I'll tell that story. Whenever I write a book, the first thing I do when I sit down to write a chapter in a book is turn on whatever music is in my head, and I listen to about half of the song or maybe 2 songs, and then I start writing. Because I write based on lyrical ideas that have moved my life into whatever way I'm writing about, you know? And right. I think a lot of people are like that, which makes this sniping and bickering all the more stupid to me.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right, another one.
Mean them, though, I get it, though, if they were like, you know, fighting between each other and sending mean texts or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, but keep it there. Why does it need to be in the public forum? Because you're trying to win. You're trying to win the public game instead of, you know, look, if somebody wrong, just sue them.
That's right. Well, that's a concern too. I mean, I think about these things now that, you know, our show's getting more attention or I'm getting more notoriety or what have you. I don't want to get sued.
Yeah.
I don't want to get sued. So I do got to be careful. If I say so, it better be true. You know,
yeah, well, of course. But we do put a disclaimer on every single video that says everything's just our opinions. So none of it's true. As far as I'm concerned, there's not a word out of our mouth coming out that's factual.
Chris Akin presents more lies.
That's right. If you want to know if it's true or not, look it up, because I'm not guaranteeing. And this all started from the fake news nonsense. I'm not guaranteeing that anything that comes out of my mouth is true. Nothing.
Yeah.
You want to look it up? Look it up. If it's true, it's true. If it's not, then I misspoke or I purposely deceived you. But it's Chris Akin Presents as a fantasy show. So is right. Classic Metal Show. So is Seth Williams. So is all of it. It's all fantasy. It's all fiction. Unless it's not. And it's up to you to figure that out. It's just
a fantasy. Can you live this fantasy life?
You know he's touring, right?
Yeah.
I'd love to go see. I have not seen Aldo Nova play live since 1982.
My friend Dario plays for him bass.
My friend Jack Frost plays for him.
Yeah, and he's my friend too. Jack Frost, yeah. I'm going to say, is a friend. I mean, he's reached out to me on Instagram. And I'm happy for both those dudes out there playing right now with him.
I think the shows are good. I haven't seen it. I'm hoping that he brings a Cleveland show because I'd love to see it. And I'd love to get back at Jack for allegedly dosing me last time I saw him and getting me high. he out of the blue gave me, this was in Chicago. We were at the Melodic Rock Fest and he was playing with somebody at Melodic Rock Fest. And he's like, hey man, want a piece of pizza? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, this Chicago deep dish pizza. I was like, yeah, ate this pizza. Next thing I knew, I was high as fuck. I mean, I was like, whoa. And I don't know if it was the alcohol that I was drinking as well, but it was just really weird. I'll just say it was very weird that I hadn't seen Jack in years. He gave me this piece of pizza, and then I was very stoned. But
who knows? So what do you think? He had some magic mushrooms on it or something?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know, and I've never really asked him about it. It
tastes like shit. Like, no, it tasted fine. Mushrooms do not taste good. So if it tasted okay, he might not have.
No, it tasted fine. It was shocking to me that I went from buzzed up a little bit. And again, I was drinking, so could just be that I didn't realize how much I was drinking either. But I was buzzed up a little bit, and then I was just fucked up in a rapid hurry. Like 20 minutes after I ate this piece of pizza, I was fucked up.
Well, I ate like a mushroom chocolate bar on the show once because Sugar Smack made me eat it. Remember?
Sure. Yeah, that was rough. And you loved it too. You loved it. Who are you kidding?
I didn't love the taste in my mouth. It tastes like Sugar Smack took a dump in my mouth. It was awful.
All right, man. One last piece of nitpicking, I think, and then we'll get the fuck out of here.
Okay.
This is another thing. This is just a pet peeve of mine, but I'll ask you before I show the article. Do you believe or not believe that there are some personal aspects of people, specifically musicians' lives, that should under no circumstances be part of promoting themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay. I would too. And this is definitely one of them that drives me crazy when I hear people promote themselves this way. Okay. Sepultura's Andreas Kisser celebrates 4 years of sobriety.
Oh,
I'm all for everybody getting sober. That's great. I know Mark Kendall's at like 30 years or whatever, and that's great on him. Keep it off of your public life, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, two reasons. Number one, if you fall, then you've let down everybody. That's the big reason. You know, he's a, you know, Andreas is out here celebrating that he's 4 years sober, and that's wonderful. That's good for him if he felt like he needed to get clean. But what if tomorrow he's having a really bad day? He's like, ah, fuck it. Give me a double Jack and Coke, you know, and make it snappy. And he drinks it.
Yeah.
You know, then you're going to have some asshole with a camera taking a picture of him and posting it out there. And then you're going to have this on Blabbermouth with a picture of Andreas drinking a rum and Coke or whatever with, after proclaiming 4 years of sobriety, it appears that Andreas Kisser is off the wagon. You know, to me, it's just a bad look. And the other piece that drives me crazy, and I will let you answer this, but the other piece that drives me crazy is people should not be looking to musicians for guidance in their life.
True.
That's most, I mean, you know a ton of musicians. I know a ton of musicians.
I do wish that Eddie Van Halen didn't smoke cigarettes when I was a kid.
Sure.
Before my brain was totally molded, like, I really wanted to be that guy so bad. You know, and Slash mm-hmm. is another one guilty of this, where, like,
yeah.
you have that many kids that are looking up to you. Maybe you should not do such a detrimental habit to them. Mm-hmm. But that's my own stupid kid fault. I smoked for 20 years. But that's other than that, you're absolutely right. You're not supposed to be looking to these guys to model your life after. Rock stars aren't – you don't model your life after rock stars.
No. So. Most rock stars, and I'm making a very general point here, not without pointing at anybody specifically. Most rock stars are just degenerate pieces of shit with a skill.
Right.
If they hadn't found that skill, if they hadn't found that ability to write a hit song, play amazing guitar, be an awesome drummer, play amazing keyboards, play amazing bass, whatever it was, they'd be the shitbag that you're seeing on Patrol Live getting arrested for running a meth lab in a trailer park somewhere. In most cases. I mean, I know a ton of musicians, and I'm not narrowing it down to anybody. I just know most of them. There's a reason that musicians get in trouble when they take 6 and 7 years between records. It's because they don't have any common sense outside of their music career. So for these guys to use their sobriety as a selling point, what the hell is that?
There could be a couple reasons. First of all, this man looks very angry, and I'm not.
Well, he's in Sepultura. He's in Sepultura. So,
like, I'm gonna say anything about this guy or speculate on him in any way. He really looks like he could hurt me.
He's actually really nice in real life. I've met Andreas a bunch of times. Well, I think that's the picture. I think it's a press photo trying to be mean.
He looks like he's staring into my pitiful soul. So I'm just going to make up stuff about someone who's not Andreas Kisser because I don't know what his deal is. But somebody else that's not him might have come out that he had a problem or something. So maybe they feel like they have to answer that by putting out a press release.
Maybe.
Now, I'm with you that although it's fantastic when people that have a problem get help, it's still a weakness. You know what I mean? There's a weakness to it. We're like, well, let's face it. This guy could relapse and be a big fucking problem if we have to choose between this guy or this guy who never had to do that because he doesn't have any issues. You know, you never know that you got some people that have been sober for 20-30 years. You don't have to worry about them so much. And those people, I wonder if they ever had a fucking problem, because,
well, maybe like, you know, and again, I don't want to point at people, but I'm going to point at this one. Mark Kendall, right. Great White was the notorious hardest partiers in the 80s. And people don't realize that. I know people think of Your Bandmate or, Motley Crue as like the craziest guys on the strip. Every single person I have talked to a man, has said that the hardest partiers in that era was Great White and was Jack and was Mark Kendall. So, and again, bravo to Mark for getting his shit together and getting clean. And, you know, he's been clean for a very long time now. I don't know the exact number, but it's a long time. And again, bravo to him.
Right.
But it should not be a selling point to his band anymore ever. It should never have been a selling point to his band.
I will, you know, interject that, you know, even as recently as when I did the Bow Wow Wow tour in 2020, you know, it's no secret that I said I was being really underpaid and that. And in those situations, like, I usually will start drinking more to compensate for the fact, you know, where I'm just like kind of unhappy with what's going on monetarily or whatever, which isn't a good excuse. I should have just left. But, you know, I was drinking a little too much and, you know, making a scene here and there and stupid shit. You know what I mean? But moving, I'm only mentioning that because now, since my heart attacks this last couple of years, like I've kind of just, I definitely party a lot less. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just part of growing up. You know, you like hit 50 and you just like, well, you can't party like you were 25 or 30 no. anymore. You know what I mean? You just kind of, you have a choice. You're either going to mm-hmm. stop doing that or die, which, yeah. you know, but I can't say looking back that I was ever like an alcoholic or something. There's some people that have a serious drinking issue and I'm just not one of those people. I could kind of, I've always been able to take it or leave it. Now, when you talk about herbs, oh man, I don't know if I could go one day without smoking. I'm a wake and baker. I smoke all right. day long and all night. Typically that doesn't create a problem with me and other people. Usually I'm more patient and loving around because I'm that mm-hmm. way in that state. But hard drugs are a big no-no for me. I don't like to work with people that are cokeheads or sure. tweakers or anything. Whatever, stay right? the fuck away from me. You're a crackhead. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. I can't deal with those kind of people in a working situation.
Sure.
Certainly you get a chance to work with somebody and maybe it's a case like you're saying, Mark Kendall, where they're an older musician from back in the day and it has been 20 years since they've touched a bottle or drank and they're a safe yeah. bet to play with or something like that. But generally I'm with you, like just having to admit that, oh no, I'm celebrating how I used to be a total disaster and you know, yeah. now I'm not anymore. It's like mm-hmm. there's a kind of weakness to making an announcement like that. People yeah. don't need to know that. And if you fuck up, you're going to look like you really failed. Mm-hmm. You know, you look like you're full of shit.
And the other piece to that is if you fuck up and people are doing it because they're following along with you, it's almost sending the message, well, it's all right. It's all right if he's fucked up because yeah, I guess I could fuck up too, you know. And, you know, like you're saying you could always take or leave alcohol. I am definitely the opposite of that. If I get rolling, I get rolling and I go months at a time where I drink a fifth a day. Dude, when I was going through my divorce, I was drinking a fifth a day of vodka every single day for like a year. For I'm not even kidding. It's,
we
you
take
know,
this gentleman's photo down. It's scaring the shit out of me. Please.
Put the nice guys
back on. Okay.
It really was scary how much I was drinking. Dude, the back picture on my book, on my Little Victories book is me holding a bottle of vodka trying to climb up on from under a table. No. I mean, it's fucked up. It's fucked up. But I'm not going to be out here saying, you know, I'm not going to be out here saying, listen, kids, I got it together and you should too. You know, I mean, I still drink on occasion, not like I used to.
Not like you used to. I love conspiracy like that. You know, he's somebody who definitely, you know, not in a hard, you know, he was never a coke guy or anything, but mm-hmm. you know, certainly he did his share of drinking and other stuff, and yeah, he's written about it. You know what I mean? He's more like, well, I'm at this stage where I'm not doing this anymore, but that doesn't mean you should yeah. have your fun. You know what I mean? Which I like.
Well, that's it.
And he's not a hypocrite. You know, where like he acts like you're doing so. Like there's the reason why I probably haven't gotten fired in 23 years is because there's probably nothing that I've done bad that he hasn't done 10 times worse or, you know, whatever. That right. would probably feel kind of guilty, fire me for that, knowing that he's done the same shit. But with that said, I've definitely become more professional over the years. And there's a lot of craziness that just doesn't happen anymore. I used to beat the shit out of people out on the road. I don't do that anymore. I haven't got into like any physical conflicts. Sure. I feel like I have a lot more to lose. Like when I was, if you're somebody that I punched, you probably had it coming, but I had nothing to lose at the time. You know what I mean? Like all I had was my dignity. I didn't have any money. I probably didn't even have a place to live. So you go do that. You got smacked. So
yeah,
hopefully you grew from it. But I have like a ton of stuff to lose. And like, I definitely think twice about that. And I have to get, as I mentioned earlier, it's important to have control over your emotions. And that's something we could learn from Stoic Steve, you know, like
that's right.
Stoic Steve get into a fucking fifth of Jack Daniels every day when things don't go his way. No, that's not how you handle things. You just take, you know, accept the things that you can't change and, you know, go ahead and work on the things you can. Speaking of that guy, I'm hiring him today to start the cooking show. He's
all right.
The first episode of the Steve Cooking Show is going to be on the subscriber page later this week, but he's coming over tonight to cook. He's going to cook a meatloaf to die for.
Ooh. Mm, yeah. Sounds good to me.
Yep.
So that's what Stoic Steve does when he's having a bad day. He doesn't run to the bottle. He runs to the kitchen, starts cooking.
Right. Well, you know, food is life and food is medicine. You know what I mean? So maybe we can learn something from him.
Hell yeah. Well, all right, man, let's wrap this one up. Obviously, you know, this has been an interesting kind of went in some weird directions, but that's all right. Talking about weird directions, I know you said it before, but give people the info on where you're going to be, when you're going to be, because it's not for a little while now, but you're going to be in Texas somewhere in, what, a month or five weeks or something?
The middle of April, we're like going to kick off like a week run in Tejas. So nice. That should be pretty cool. I mean, Texas kicks ass, dude.
I spent 3 months there in rehab. Honest to God, in rehab. I really did. That's the truth. When I was in the military, I had a choice of getting kicked out of the military or going to rehab. So I went to rehab, and I went to El Paso. Oh, loved it. Had a great time in El Paso. But, man, the only bitch I have about Texas, and it's a slight bitch, it is fucking hot.
Right.
Oh, my God, is it hot. Like, I lived in Arizona. When I had to go to rehab, I went from Arizona to Texas. Mm-hmm. I was living on the border of Arizona. Not exactly a cool place. I mean, it's hot, but it wasn't hot like Texas. Texas is oppressive heat in the summer.
I lived in Austin for a bit. I moved out like 2003 for a woman I met, and I lived there for about a year. And yeah, it's pretty brutal. Like, you get out of the shower, and you're just going from to your apartment to your car. You're soaking wet and sweat by the time you get into it. It's pretty brutal. But nobody really is outside. I mean, they're in air-conditioned places. And you just don't spend time outside like you do here in San Diego. Everybody's out riding their bikes, skateboarding and jogging. It's just not that way there. You'll die.
Yeah, it's too much. But I know, I remember I was working a job, and they sent me to Texas a lot. Like, every week I would go to Texas and then fly back. And I remember one job I did in Houston in July. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just going outside to my car, it almost felt like somebody dropped a weight on me. It was like, you know, you open the door, it's like, I was like, oh, this is
Florida.
Hot.
Florida's a different thing too, because like Florida's humid, really humid. Like,
oh, that humidity is awful.
But those are two places, for some reason, neither state forgot how to rock.
No, that's true.
When we play our craziest fun shows where the crowds are not, you know, all AARP, you know, it's usually Texas and Florida that's right. The case. So I always look forward to it. So I'm getting in shape myself. I've been working out every day. I'm getting ready for this run. So I'm ready to kick ass, Texas. So you better be ready too.
Hell yeah. So check out Eric in Texas. You can get the information over at officialstephenpiercy.com. I, of course, will be all the places I normally am. The Seth Williams Show, Classic Metal Show. If you missed it, I was on the Metal Voice last week a couple of times. My buddy Jimmy Kay invited me on to talk about the Judas Priest record and the Bruce Dickinson record, which very nice of him. You know, guy has 100,000 fucking followers, and he's inviting me to be an expert. So it's like, all right, great. You know, so thank you to him. Thank you to you guys for watching. And that's going to do it. So for Chris Aiken Presents, I am Chris Aiken.
And I'm Eric Ferrantinos.
And we are gone. See you, kids.
It's the limited edition 6-pick set from Eric Ferrantinos. Get your autograph set today at ericpicks.cmspn.com. $25 includes first class shipping. I drag a float with the keys to your city. I scratch a surface down to your life. I see the signs.